use it as a tool that can not only present our scientific findings and summaries of the science that has occurred during the year, but also begin to think about strategies and adaptation solutions that can be applied for communities in the Arctic and for people around the world as we deal with the consequences of Arctic change.
We've been doing the report card for 11 years, and when it started, you kind of had to listen closely because the Arctic was whispering change, and now it's not whispering anymore. It's speaking change, it's shouting change.
That was Don Perovich, adjunct professor of engineering at Dartmouth College. During the Q&A session, a journalist asked about the economic consequences of the rapidly warming Arctic. Here's Marco Tedesco, research professor at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory.
If you think about in North America, when the snow melts, how much snow you have, how fast will disappear, it's impacting a lot of activities in terms of hydropower production, for example, freshwater resources, but also it's impacting the ecosystems around it. You know, the snow melting sooner and faster is leaving a drier soil exposed to a warmer summer. So you might have more droughts, you might have more forest fires. So this might have, of course, ramifications for the economy, for population. Permafrost thaw, of course, has a big impact on infrastructure in Alaska and other places where it was considered to be permanently frozen, and now it's not anymore.
It's a common question, when will the Arctic be ice-free in summer? And it's important to remember in summer, there'll still be ice in the winter. There's a lot of speculation. If you look at model projections, around 2040. But again, that's just an estimate of an unknown future. Another interesting question to pose is, when will the reduction of sea ice be so large that it impacts human activities? And I like that question because that's one I can answer. And that's right now. We've seen it in increased resource exploration. We saw it this past summer with the cruise ship, the Crystal Serenity, navigating the Northwest Passage that more than a century ago, no one could get through at all. So I think we're seeing changes in the sea ice cover now that are impacting human activities, and it's a particularly difficult time because the ice is in transition, and transitions are always particularly difficult to predict. In terms of the sea ice cover, I mean, we talk a lot about changing from 8 million square kilometers to 3 million square kilometers, and those are big numbers. But if you look at it, back in the 1980s, the September ice extent was around the size of the continental United States. If we look at this past year, 2016, it's as though part of the United States has melted. The entire United States east of the Mississippi, plus the states from Minnesota all the way down to Louisiana, plus all of North Dakota. So the changes are significant. The changes are real. We put these changes out there so people are aware of what's going on.
And also, of course, the Arctic report card is based on observations. It's evidence-based on the observations. The data is paid by the public, by the U.S. public, through the federal government, and it's publicly available. It's transparent, and I think it speaks for itself.
If we left this room and looked from space at the Arctic sea ice cover, it's bright and it's white. It reflects most of the sunlight, reflects 80% of the sunlight incident on it. But when that melts away and you have an ocean, it goes from being a good reflector of sunlight to a really good absorber of sunlight. It absorbs over 90% of the sunlight, and that causes warming, which causes more melting, which causes more warming, and you get a feedback. And that's called the ice albedo feedback. But it's a way that you can take a small change and amplify it into a big change. In terms of the impact on marine ecosystems, there's a couple things going on that also, even before the ice melts away, it thins. In a simple sense, for phytoplankton, they need nutrients and they need light. And as the ice melts, they're getting more light, so you get these big blooms. And the question is the rest of the food web ready to interact with these blooms when and where they happen? And that's something that we just don't know at this time.
And Don, if I may add something also there, if you expose the ocean, you're changing completely also the way the surface interacts with the atmosphere, because exposing the ocean releases more moisture in the atmosphere, which in turn means energy and can be used for melting even more. We see this connections for Greenland, for example, between the sea ice disappearance and Greenland, and we see other connections about cloud formations and other things that might impact the atmosphere around the Arctic.
And I will add one thing. I can't sit up here and not say ocean acidification one time, for those of you who know me. So, the greening that's happening in the Arctic, this increase in primary productivity, is stimulating phytoplankton growth, which may have positive effects on the Arctic ecosystem. It may provide more more food into the base of the food web. But at the same time, that primary productivity is the mechanism by which carbon dioxide is moved from the atmosphere into the ocean. And that's what ocean acidification is. It's the movement of carbon from the air into the water. So we already see a rapid progression of ocean acidification in the Arctic, and that seems to be accelerating as the ice melts back further and further and productivity increases. So on the one hand, we're going to be having more phytoplankton and providing more food into the food web, but on the other hand, it's going to be an exacerbation of the ocean acidification effect. So that's another process that we're going to have to pay very close attention to see what the balance is between ecosystem productivity and impacts associated with ocean acidification.
Are there any other questions from reporters in the room?
I understand that the Arctic and the Antarctic are very different environments, but I think sometimes it gets confusing as to why there's ice growth in Antarctica and then these annual report cards from the Arctic showing such dramatic change. So can you explain why looking at the Arctic is not just cherry picking a very dramatic region?
I would say if it's raining in Italy, would you think that the same thing has to happen in the West Coast of the United States? I mean, they are completely different systems. What joins them together is the fact that they are covered by ice. But the atmosphere, the ice, the size of the continent, the size of the ice, and how they react to the input from the atmospheric change in terms of system is completely different. Greenland, the Arctic, is an ocean surrounded by land. Antarctica is this piece of ice surrounded by ocean. The winds, somehow, circumpolar winds, are protecting Antarctica somehow from spills of what mid-latitudes activities going on in terms of the atmosphere. Ozone hole, believe it or not, is responsible for some of the strengthening or weakening of these circumpolar winds. And they are very two different systems. So I understand there might be some confusion, but this sounds to me like the postcard I saw once when somebody says, greetings from the Arctic, and it was a polar bear and a penguin. So this confusion should not happen, I think.
Hi, Santa Barbara Independent. From your remarks about the trends, it sounded like this fall in the Arctic might have been a little bit of a surprise. If so, can you talk about that, Mr. Perovich?
It was a record, and records are always, you know, somewhat surprising. When I look at things, for me, the biggest surprise was in 2007. The Arctic sea ice summer extent reached an all-time record minimum by a record amount. And if you look at the time series of ice extent, it's never gone higher than it was in 2006. So it's as though we were in one state slowly declining, and then there was this sharp drop to a new normal that we've continued to bounce around. Some years are a little up. 2012 was another record minimum, but it's just there was this major change in 2007. And for me, that was a big surprise. I think it is interesting to see what's going to happen this year with the fact that fall freeze-up is so slow and the air temperatures are so warm, but it's still early in the year.
And for me, the surprise this year has been we've shifted a little bit. The stories have been about the summertime, summer minimum, summer temperature excursions, summer snow cover. And now we're seeing the persistent warming carrying over into the winter months. So we don't know enough yet. We need a few more years to see if that trend continues or if it has been a one-off thing related to some larger global process. But if the persistent warming that we've seen this fall carries over for the next few years, then as Don just said, we may be at another step in a regime shift in the Arctic that will lead to a new era of change, even compared to what we're seeing now.
And as we pointed out also for Greenland, it's just not lasting longer. It's also starting earlier. We suffer the snow over the United States. So the melting season is also stretched, somehow getting longer, invading somehow spring and fall And this is creating preconditioning before the current melt, but also is preconditioning potentially the next melting season.
I think we have time for one last question.
My name is Mary Miller from the Exploratorium. You mentioned what happens in the Arctic doesn't stay there. Can you give us some examples of how, for instance, that extremely warm fall has potentially affected weather patterns, in other parts of the world, maybe us down here?
Do you want to take that, Marco?
I think there are people in the audience who can somehow link to this, and I'm asking them if they feel comfortable to speak. But in the case of, for the atmospheric point of view, in jet stream, and I just don't want to put Jennifer on the spot, but Jennifer Francis, she is here. But for Greenland, in any case, where we talk about albedo, remember that also we're talking about large-scale phenomena. If the solar radiation is absorbed more by the ocean, there's less in the atmosphere. The gradient, the difference between the temperature at the pole and the mean latitude is one of the drivers of climate on Earth, and that is changing, and that is impacting weather patterns and climate. But Jennifer she's willing to say something, but I'll be more than happy to do so.
Sure. Jennifer Francis at Rutgers University. Thanks, Marco. It's difficult to unravel how current or extreme weather that we've seen this fall, and there has been plenty of that, might have a role of the Arctic in it. I mean, that will be topics of research for sure. But that said, seeing an Arctic that's so much warmer than it should be all this fall by such huge margins, I can't imagine that there isn't going to be an impact on the weather that we've seen this fall. Over the last few years, we've noticed that when we have these big pulses of warmth in the Arctic, they are always associated with extreme weather events. And again, it's hard to make absolute definite connections between those two things, but we definitely see these causal relationships. And as Marco said, when the Arctic gets so warm and reduces this north to south temperature difference, we know that tends to have a slowing effect on the west to east winds of the jet stream. It tends to take these bigger north-south swings, and that all by itself is contributing to the warming of the Arctic. So it's helping to bring that warm air and moisture poleward, which is exacerbating the warming, which is maybe causing the jet stream to be even wavier. So we may be seeing this new feedback emerging between the warming Arctic and what's happening with the jet stream.
Thank you. We are out of time. That concludes our press conference. Thank you very much.
That was Professor Jennifer Francis from Rutgers University. She was part of the team of 61 scientists from 11 nations that presented the 11th annual peer-reviewed report card on the status of the Arctic under the auspices of NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The other speakers were Marco Tedesco, he's professor at Lamont Doherty Earth Observatory, Columbia University, New York, and NOAA's Arctic Research Program Director, Jeremy Mathis, and Don Perovich, Adjunct Professor of Engineering at Dartmouth College. The report provided the latest information on the accelerating warming of the Arctic. The Arctic Report Card 2016 has been posted free online from the beginning. We need to make sure that this research will not be defunded or classified. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio's free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.
Hey, KBOO Community Radio is in this year's Willamette Week Give Guide. The Give Guide highlights 140 local nonprofits doing some great work. But give to KBOO and Give Guide today and help us highlight the impact community radio has throughout the Willamette Valley. The Give Guide is an easy, secure way to make a gift to KBOO. You get Chinook book discounts, free great stuff, and your donation receipt right in your inbox. If you aren't a KBOO member yet, now's the time to join. Your Give Guide contribution will be matched one-to-one. In fact, extra gifts to KBOO will be matched too. It's a great way to help us secure our challenge match. Go to kboo.fm and click on the yellow banner on the top of the screen. Thank you for supporting KBOO.
The time is 6 p.m. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Labor Radio.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. I'm Jamie Partridge, your host, and tonight we have two guests, Marco Mejia from the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition and Romeo Sosa on the phone with us, I'm hoping. Romeo, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. And Marco, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you for having us here tonight.
Romeo is with the Wolf's Workers' Rights Education Project. So, Romeo, why don't we start off with hearing from you. Give a little background for our listeners about the Volts Workers' Rights Education Project. What is your history and what are you up to today?